that we... Hey, happy hour.
Yeah. Happy fucking happy hour. Fuck you, FCC. We ain't gonna know what fucking FCC. Happy fucking happy hour.
So there's four of us in the room.
Oh my God. This is so exciting for the listeners. This is... Ron Hartenbaum.
Last name.
The guy that owns the show that's trying to kill me for the life insurance money.
Hey.
But we're going on 14 years together.
It is. I know that's true.
And you you're suck at killing me. Jesus, Ron.
This is also true.
Look, it's old home week. We're all... And you... Okay. Vanessa, I don't know you recorded that because we're going to fucking get sued because Vanessa's still taking pain meds for her car accident and Ron's like, have something to drink. Have some...
Why does that sound like Donald Trump?
That's a little bit. But she weighs 4 pounds. Really?
I can't.
I can't call 911.
I feel like I'm going to have cardiac arrest. I probably shouldn't, you know?
You know why? Because he's fucking staying here, perv. And he's like, it's okay. There's an extra bedroom next to mine.
That's right.
Oh, my God. Creepy guy that owns the show. Knock, knock, knock.
No.
Are you Vanessa? Okay?
Vanessa?
Deeper voice.
Vanessa?
Yeah, much better.
I'm texting you in the next
room. It's Ron Hartman. Okay, so we just had this idea today because we had someone real booked.
Thank you.
But then we were like, Ron's in town. And my favorite scenario I told you in our whole history is at a sexy liberal show. I don't remember where, but some woman literally had him jacked up against a wall. And she was like, don't kill her for the life insurance money. We need her. Yeah. People take our jokes seriously.
And then I offered her half of the money if she would help.
And then she changed her tune right away. She was like, well, I don't love her that much.
There you go. But somehow, she's still here.
Yeah. Remember, because you used to send Jim and I, like, I don't know, these fucking rickety old planes and hailstorms to do the radio show live from fucking Columbus or something.
When we first did the Sexy Liberal comedy tour.
Right.
The earlier rendition.
Yeah.
We would play progressive markets that we used to have
right.
when there were certain radio groups who were about to go bankrupt, had progressive radio stations.
Right.
And some of them were in places like Columbus, Ohio, or Madison, Wisconsin,
right.
or Asheville, North Carolina. The Asheville affiliate, which is a great one, still exists.
Yeah.
And Brian Hall, who is the program director and above, actually he's the group program director.
Yeah, and has an enormous penis.
I don't know that.
What?
But
I do. What?
Why would you
know
that?
Really?
Huh?
Don't get him in trouble.
What? I'm sorry.
So.
Yes.
You know, we would go to all of these places for the tour. And it meant that we had to fly into a gateway city and then take a smaller plane.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, often in inclement weather.
I remember
I'm sure that was inadvertent.
In Asheville, we took a propeller plane. I had never been on a propeller plane that was like, you know, an airline plane that was a propeller.
And then to save money, Ron would rent like...
Yes.
I don't know, fucking what? Smart car. And so I remember the first date, me and John Fugelsang, whose legs and penis are roughly 6 feet long.
Right.
And Hal Sparks and Ron and I are jammed
Quality
into
fellow.
Like a fucking, like something.
Right.
Yeah. So that's Sexy Liberal Tour was born.
Yes.
Because of this cheap ass motherfucker.
and here we is today.
Here we are.
Numerous
we survived.
Years later.
We've got all our lives to live. We've got all our lives. Oh, you know what? We should. All right. Because I kid a lot.
Yeah.
You
but
like
I've
this
said
song,
this.
Don't
I've
you?
Said this publicly. It pains me. Ron Hartenbaum is responsible for whatever progressive media and radio exists in the United States of America today.
Yeah.
Ladies and gentlemen, on Made in America Week, let's salute Ron Hartenbaum.
Yes.
Thank you.
For seriously, like single handedly keeping progressive media alive in America.
It's been collaborative.
Well, it's why I can call you cheap ass motherfucker. Creepy.
Yes.
That's right.
Guy's trying to kill me for life insurance money on the air because there's so much love behind the scenes.
Yes, but it is collaborative.
Behind the music.
And soon we're going to have an announcement that there's going to be more.
That's what I've heard.
Yes, yes.
Mm-hmm. So did you think he was going to show up with like a top hat and a cane and a bag of cash?
With the Monopoly money bags guy?
How good is that?
Yeah, exactly.
What was that guy called?
Mr. Money? Mr. Something. Oh,
uh-huh. See, there's a trivia question. The person that that can let us know via email somehow to Vanessa. What's your email address so you could be in charge of this? Don't you have
isn't
a show
creepy?
Email?
Isn't it
no,
creepy?
Don't you? I have her email.
Do I want to put this on this podcast?
Isn't there a separate
Vanessa
show
at StephanieMiller.com.
Okay. So the first email that can answer to Vanessa at that email address.
Yes.
Who that guy is.
Okay, you know, in Monopoly. In the Monopoly, sure.
They'll get their choice of either a sexy liberal comedy tour DVD, Blu-ray, or now regular.
There you go.
See how we slipped that right in?
That was
huckster.
Great.
Full-time right. huckster.
Hello, if he's Donald Trump could
can
do it, so
we rarely ever hear from him. He doesn't even know what fucking time we do this because he calls at all hours. Okay, we have some things to talk about. We're on the air! Okay, and also, no, but the one time he did text me, he's like, no, don't give Vanessa to your brother. I was like, oh, you're listening? Because you never listen, but okay.
Bill is delightful.
Is he?
He is.
No, okay. He's not. He's a right-wing.
Hey, it happens.
All right. Okay, I can't, listen, an employment law. We can't give Vanessa to anybody. Do you understand that? She's not chattel.
Okay.
I know she's hot, but just, Jesus.
So we're not going to do that.
You can't fucking drug her. You can't fucking Cosby her and make her sleep in a bedroom next to yours so you can creep over there.
I won't show up then. I'll go to a different bedroom in a different house. And you could stay here. See?
And the thing, I'm going to put the pills in the people. Well, that's all right. That you're already taking some pain meds. Have some bourbon. That's my...
Good bourbon, by the way. How is your Chardonnay?
You know what? I'm trying a lovely Sancerre today.
Oh, that's
because I had that in France.
Oh, mm.
Now, Ron.
I don't even know what that is. It looks white to me.
You know? What? It's well, French. So does Vanessa, well, but she's not. What? Oh, no. Half white, half black. Leave her alone. She has her mom is Mexican, her father's African American. They both fucking voted for Trump.
Yes.
Is that true?
Yes.
How do you feel about that?
Pretty fucked up.
Not so good. Not so good.
When I go home, there's a Trump Pence flag hanging over there.
Is it really?
Oh,
really?
Jesus Christ.
Yeah.
Really?
They're like, how's that communist whore you work with?
Oh my gosh.
I don't think they say that about you, just your mother. Oh, I do listen to the show.
She invited me for Thanksgiving. I didn't want to go.
Did you?
Yeah, I did.
Oh, okay. To your parents' house.
Like, Tamale's Intention. I feel like she could bring
Tamale's Intention? I was like, no thanks. I already have asked for reflux. Fucking Donald Trump's president.
Oh
my God.
It's
all right. Okay. So, Ronald.
Yes.
Stephanie.
Back to you.
It's not about me, Steph. It's about you.
No, thank you. That's why this relationship works. No, not many people know this, but Ronald has a fascinating history. First of all, his father was Sam the Butcher from the Brady Bunch, which is fantastic.
Wow. That's a lie.
What? Okay. No, he was not. Okay, not Sam, but he was an actual butcher.
Yes, I am an SOB, a son of a butcher.
Yes.
Yes.
Well, I've always said you are.
Yes.
SOB.
Yes. Yes. And then to get, you know, serious, but we could descend into chicanery quickly.
Oh, well,
and then my mother was a Holocaust survivor, so.
No,
let's not make a joke about that.
Okay, or, you're probably right about that, even for me.
That's amazing. Oh.
Yes.
Yeah. Mm.
I told you a joke about that Vanessa stole all of the LA Weeklies from Cantor's Deli and caused a new diaspora. All the Jews were wandering, going, where's the article about the Shiksa?
I've heard so much.
Where's the goy?
They were
where's
chasing
the radio
me down,
goy?
Chase me down Fairfax. I'll come back.
Oh my God, you're so anti-Semitic. Ron had no idea.
Listen,
King's like, hello, where's Stephanie Miller, LA Weekly, Shiksa? Hello. Where is it?
We are going to get the article reprinted so that we could hand them out to people.
Mm. Fantastic. All right, Ron, wait. Do we have nostalgia music? Do we not?
Sure.
What is it called?
Nostalgia.
Yeah, there
is
you go.
Is it really?
Made it.
Yeah.
I brought some common sense.
Okay. Ronald.
Oh, so like.
What's your middle name? 50s, what's your middle name?
50s doo-wop is nostalgia music?
What's your middle name?
Ready?
Yes.
Fred.
Like my dog.
Fred.
I named my dog after
you. No, you didn't name your dog after me.
Ronald Fred Hartenbaum.
That is correct. Would you like to give out my social security number?
Born in where?
Born
Queens.
When?
Queens, New York.
Yes.
Only in 19... Flarman?
In 1950-something. And,
okay.
And here's the thing.
All right.
You know, I was born in the very same borough of New York City.
Yes.
That our president
was born. Excuse me. Oh, I'm sorry. I'm sorry, that was totally inadvertent.
Oh, you said the P word.
I just think I'm going to barf.
Uh-huh.
We don't say the P word here?
No.
No.
We do not say.
And we certainly don't say our.
That is a firing offense saying the words president and then also the word Trump after that. Since
can I ask you, how do you feel when you see him walk onto Air Force One.
Don't. Well, I enjoy the interpretive dance that his hair does when there's wind.
Right.
Which is fucking fantastic. Just, you know, Twyla, Fosse, Fosse. And then, you know, I have to say that fucking marmoset has respect for the office. Because when he gets on Air Force One, it pulls its shit together. And it's like, all right, we're on Air Force One. And then it all comes together when he gets on.
It does.
Whatever that bullshit is that's up there.
I'm just hoping he can find Air Force One. Because he can't seem to find much stuff. So people have to, you know.
Oh, is it? Oh, I'm sorry. That's the car I get in? Fantastic. Yeah. Terrific. Who knew?
Yeah.
Ronald. Okay, I'm sorry. Let's go back to Ronald. Fred Hartenbaum?
Yes. Can we have that sound effect again?
Hmm? What? Okay, son of a butcher.
Yes.
Son of a butcher.
Yeah.
Okay, so... Okay, wait. Right, we can take that away for a second. So, wait a minute.
Yes.
Because you did end up having gout, which was a bad thing because you said...
Yes.
I was the son of a...
Butcher.
Butcher. Right, and so you eat a lot of meat and stuff, right?
Right, yes. Who doesn't, you know, how could you have your pudding if you don't eat your meat?
If you don't eat your meat.
Exactly. Don't take that the wrong way.
But so, all right. So you had a rich man's disease, gout.
Yes.
From eating.
Oh,
but,
boy.
But now that I'm involved with the show.
Right.
I've been cured.
Right. Of course. Yeah. We cure all ills. Your dad was a butcher in Queens.
Yes.
And wait, I know you had siblings, but I forget because I've blacked all that. Because it's not about me. How many siblings?
No, it is about
How many siblings?
Huh?
You had the sister.
I had a sister, yes.
Yes. She passed away.
She did.
Ron has had, there will be no jokes in this, but Ron has had a lot of tragedy in his life.
I have.
Which really cuts down on my jokes, which is...
So let's switch the topic.
All right.
Let's talk about Vanessa.
Let's talk about your childhood. How many? The one sister?
I did. I had one sister.
All right. And wait, you have to tell because people don't realize how fascinating this. Your mom was a Holocaust survivor. So tell us that story.
So that's a pretty interesting story.
Yeah.
Because my maternal grandfather, who I never met because he was killed during World War II.
In the camps or
yeah
oh in okay.
in okay. and mm-hmm. As was my grandmother. So my mother was the eldest of five children.
Wait, not in they were both killed in the camps, not
right.
in battle.
Yes.
Okay.
Right.
Okay.
You know, they were captured Jews, and so what happened is at a certain point, because my mother, my maternal grandfather owned a bus company in Eastern Europe, and so my grandparents were better economically off than maybe some of their peers. And so my grandfather sent all of his children, you'll appreciate this, to Catholic parochial schools, just like you went.
Oh, dear.
And he did that because in Eastern Europe, Catholic parochial schools were the best education. And my mother spoke numerous languages, which actually saved her life and my aunt's lives. But at a certain point, she was an interpreter for Dr. Mengele, and because she spoke different languages, and it was like send people to the right, send people to the left.
Mom was an interpreter for Dr. Mengele.
Right, send people to the left. She sent her own parents and her youngest brother to the gas chamber, not knowing that that's where they were going. But you know, when the Germans saw a young child, it was like, okay, let's take the parents and the young child, and boom. Those four girls, they're teenagers, they're going to be healthy, they'll be strong, they'll be good slave labor, they will not revolt, they're not guys. Mm-hmm. Let's take those girls and put them off to do slave labor. So when, at one point, you know, I'm involved with a number of different radio shows on Sirius XM.
Yes.
And one of them is the Karen Hunter Show.
Karen Hunter, Tom Hartman. Tell everybody who else you were, we didn't get to that.
Stephanie Miller.
Yes, but okay.
Dean Abdallah.
Yes.
Somebody that was...
Sprouted. Hatched from my loins.
There you go. How cool was that? the comedian Godfrey. We're starting a show with him July 31st.
Yeah.
Laura Coates, who you could see on CNN a lot. And so we've been, and then of course Michael Steele and Rick Unger, the mm-hmm. Steele and Unger show on the POTUS channel. So we've got all of these great shows.
Right.
And but that wasn't the point.
No, it wasn't the point. How did we get off the point? We're
I
old.
Don't know,
Ron, we're old. We've been doing this for 1,000 years.
Starting something right, so your mom.
XM, yes.
You asked about Karen.
Right. So Karen, exactly. So Karen. You know, we were once, you know, in her studio, and we were talking about how stress can, and this is a proven scientific fact. This is now something that science, I know a lot of people in our country don't believe in science, but this is a scientific researched fact that stress and people's living conditions and environments can change their genetics. So, you know, being black in America, and let's say in the South after the Civil War,
right,
during the 30s, 40s, 50s, today, that can put stress on you and literally change your genetics. And again, this is, you know, Google it, check it out. There's research that backs this up. And so we were talking about slavery,
yeah,
and what it all meant. And at a certain point, I looked around the room at everybody and I said, you know, we're all talking about slavery. I said, it's interesting because I'm the only white person in this studio. And I'm the only one that actually was the child of a slave.
Right.
And so, you know.
Interesting, yeah. Because of the. So, no, wait. So, you're. Oh, my God. That's a fascinating story. So, your mom was a translator for Dr. Mengele.
And then she ran away from him when my grandmother said to her eldest daughter, you've just sent your three younger sisters off in the other direction. Go be the elder sister and take care of them. And my mother kept her and her three sisters alive.
Wow.
During the war. And then at one point after World War II, when they were liberated for a short time, you know, while General Eisenhower was touring one of the concentration camps that were liberated by the Allied troops, she did interpretation for him.
Yeah.
So it's a real yin yang of people.
Now, since I wouldn't fuck you when we met, do you think the main...
And you still won't today.
And the main driver... Do you think the main
and
driver...
Wait a minute. And
do you
Vanessa,
think the main
minute,
driver
Vanessa,
was...
And Vanessa, wait. And I have always loved all of her girlfriends. Loved all of her girlfriends. One of her girlfriends I didn't know was her girlfriend. In fact, I thought she was the girlfriend having an affair with one of my bosses after we sold a company, because I always saw them together, and right, I thought, wow, you know. And then all of a sudden
I said, that's not happening, Ron, right. I'll tell you what is happening. Wow.
So, you know, the moral of the story is I did share with Stephanie that I'm, you know, giving some serious consideration to having a sex change operation. First step in the
whatever
process.
Takes,
right?
Every time
whatever
he asks me to send him a picture of my girlfriend, he's like, God damn it, why aren't I a lesbian?
Right. So A, first sex change. B, then
right,
become gay. And
right,
C, there you go. There you have go a shot at some of go Stephanie's.
No, what I was going to ask, Ronald, is because I wouldn't fuck you.
Is and you
because,
still won't.
Is it because my dad was,
didn't
a,
I just say
was,
that
a, was a prosecutor at Nuremberg that
no
decided to do this with me?
No. No.
You know. But no, that's quite a history. That is really,
it is.
And I don't think I even knew that early on. Like when you told me that story about your mom, and wait, did you say there's a book?
There is. It's
how
called
we get
Giselle.
It?
I don't know. It's called Giselle Save the Children. You probably have to go online and see if there's a used copy.
Yeah.
But it's a pretty good book.
What's it called again?
Giselle.
Okay.
Save the Children.
Wow. Okay.
Which is what her mother said to her. The last thing her mother said to her.
Yeah.
Which were directions to, you know.
Yeah.
Go
yeah
watch your sisters.
Oh,
which she did.
Shit. So what, so is that, where did your, is that where you, you know, you began your progressive, because I have to say, because, and I'm not that drunk yet, as you know me.
Will you be?
I'm so proud
of you.
I'm so proud of you because he has, listen.
I have another party
to
go to after
no,
this.
Listen, he has made a lot of money. He's had a radio ad sales company that he sold, and he can do, you know, a lot of shit. But the fact that you're doing this and you have kept progressive media alive, it shows that that's a real passion for you. I mean,
yeah,
it really is.
Yeah.
It
right
really is. You could, you know, it's so funny. You, when I met him, he had several Porsches, and his now wife was like, Ron, the Porsches keep getting sold. They keep going away. And he's like, well, I used to be in sales, and now...
Right. Right. One of my wife's favorite lines is, have you thought about going back into ad sales instead of programming?
Oh,
exactly. Yeah. But it was good that those cars went away.
Yeah.
They're gorgeous cars. They're
yes
really, I mean,
well,
for people that love cars.
We have cameras now because your goddamn Porsche
yeah,
went
yes
away.
Yes. But, you know, yeah, I had three different Porsche twin turbos, different generations.
What?
Yes.
Oh, no, I was in them. It was terrifying.
No. They're gorgeous.
Oh, no, though they're great. They're very fast.
They're very okay nice pieces of equipment.
Fantastic. Okay, so, Ron.
Would you like another glass of wine?
Yes, I would. Because we need to get to the next part of your story, which is, oh God.
Yes.
All right. Let me just say, this is not going to be the funniest happy hour ever, but it's going to be the most touching.
Yes.
Because is that what we're doing? Are we talking about Michael
and
Laura?
Now your mom and dad have passed now.
Yes, but they both, God bless them, lived to be just shy of 90.
When?
So, and they used to both smoke like, you know, 2-3 packs of cigarettes. My father used to smoke cigarettes, pipes, cigars, and he still ended up living to literally a month shy of 90.
Wow.
So,
yeah.
You know.
And this is the great story about Ron. So he thought he was having a heart attack one night, and they called the ambulance. And
this is a great story. No, I wasn't that I was
having a heart attack. It's a great story. It's a guy story.
No, it wasn't a guy story. It was a moment of honesty. So, may I tell?
Yes, please.
So we're talking about with me and Alex. And
when you
were,
what you said to them in the room ambulance.
Was spinning. I didn't say it in the ambulance.
Oh, okay.
Let me. Here's the story.
Right, okay.
We're like an old married professional couple.
I had a case of vertigo, which I've never had.
Oh, yeah.
And anybody in the audience who's had a case of vertigo can vouch for the fact that it sucks. And I didn't know why it was happening. Actually, I found out why it was happening afterwards. I was working out 2-3 hours a day because one of our children was getting married. And so it was like, okay, I need to lose weight and get in shape.
Oh, that was crazy.
Pictures.
Yeah.
But yet I'd still be in Las Vegas or in other places, and it would be, you know, steak, cream spinach, onion rings, you know, a lot of bourbon. And so I was literally on both sides. And what happened in my blood chemistry is that my sugar spiked and my potassium crashed. And all of a sudden the room started spinning round and round and round really fast. And it was like, wow, I've never felt this. I don't feel good, blah, blah, blah. So at a certain point, my wife calls 911 and an ambulance comes and two guys walk into our bedroom. And my eyes are now closed because the room is just spinning around so much. And I'm feeling horrible. And you know, there wasn't anything, you know, not to be coarse, but it is happy hour. If you drink too much, that's exactly what was happening to me. It was like, you know, it was just, you know, the guys look at me and go to my wife. And of course I could hear them. I think he's either having a major stroke or a heart attack. I agree with you.
Is that food's here early. I'm sorry. Wow. Who gets to go get it? Can you do it? Okay.
We can't.
It's all paid for.
That shows. And don't bother giving the guy a tip.
Unless Ron has some money.
Okay. We ended up, they said, we can't help him. And these two EMTs. We need to call paramedics because they have stuff on their ambulance. And maybe that could help him. We're not sure. And I'm thinking, what the fuck? Exactly. That's what I was thinking.
Why do they come? That's so puzzling.
So now all of a sudden, another ambulance comes. And, you know, you hear it coming down the street because we live in Manhattan. And it's like, okay, so now there's another ambulance. So now there's four guys in our bedroom. And they go, okay, let's, you know, get him in the ambulance. And so I'm now in a different ambulance, like a really huge, big, tall ambulance. And they just cut open like a really gorgeous, like, T-shirt that I had. And
right.
Thinking, wow. And then all of a sudden somebody sticks dissolvable aspirin in me, and you know, it's orange flavored, and it's like, wow, they really think I'm having a heart attack or something. And then they start saying to my wife, you know, we don't think we're going to be able to get him to the emergency room in time. And I'm listening to all of this, right? And then another guy goes, yeah, you know, we think he's going to die. Right
in front of you.
God,
I mean, my eyes are closed, but I'm hearing all of this.
Ugh.
Then the guy takes my blood pressure and goes, you know, your blood pressure is elevated. And I had the temerity to say, have you guys been listening to what the fuck you've been saying? You know, this is going. And then my wife decides to get in a discussion with them about what hospital to go to. And now they're having a debate. And I'm in the back of the ambulance being told I'm going to die. We don't think we can get him to the ER in time, let alone even if we got him to the ER that he would live. It's probably a stroke. It could be a heart attack, maybe a combination. I'm feeling like I've never felt horrible before, not in any pain, just, you know,
just like from you,
just
motherfuckers.
Like,
right.
And finally I go, listen, I swear I will get off of this gurney. And even with the room spinning, I will drive this ambulance to the closest hospital that I know. Can you just select the hospital and let's go? So they select the hospital. We go, we get there, you know, and it turns out that they stabilize me. They do all this stuff. And you know, about 18 hours later, I get to go home. And so, okay, great. A couple of weeks later, we're at a dinner party.
Oh, no.
And one of my wife's friends said, and we told them this story. And so the woman said, so what were you thinking when they told you you were going to die? And I thought, really? You know, do you know? She said, yeah, were you thinking anything?
Wait for
what
this.
Were you thinking?
Okay.
So I said, are you sure? And she said, yeah, I asked the question. I said, okay, I will give you this answer. And this is an honest answer. It was an honest answer. I stand by it. I could look right in the camera and give this answer with happiness. You'll appreciate this. And I turned to the woman and I said, what was I thinking? I wasn't thinking about my children, honestly. I wasn't thinking about the grandchildren I didn't have at the time, but now fortunately I'm having.
Right.
I looked at the woman and I said, I thought, wow, I'm not going to have any more blowjobs from Alex anymore. And
he literally thought, no more blowjobs.
Right, that was it.
That's what a man thinks. If you want to know what a man's thinking right before he dies.
Wow, no more blowjobs.
No more blowjobs.
And there's your happy hour moment.
Well, that is really fantastic and romantic, Ron.
It's true. Hey, listen, it's a compliment. I did say to my wife, this is a compliment
from you. I didn't say this just a random blowjob.
No, from her.
A blowjob from you.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. Alex. God, I did say Alex, right.
Well, that'd be a beautiful eulogy at the church.
Synagogue.
Right. Yeah.
Right. The Buddhist, gathering.
It's a good thing you lived. The last thing he said is, she would not have known that.
That's right.
The last thing Ron said is, what a Shonda it would be if I got no more blowjobs.
Right.
I have to ask, what was her reaction, this guest, at the dinner party when you told her?
The guest?
Yeah, when we told her.
I think a lot of people laughed. I think others that knew me said, yes, okay, there's a typical answer from an a-hole. my wife has sometimes told that story over with pride.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes Sean, where she shouldn't
right.
say
it. Do you think that honestly? Right. Do you think that's what every man thinks before they die? Do you think that's the last thing every man thinks? Probably.
Did you have one recently? Was it on your mind or were you due?
Did the blowjob cause the stroke? Like what?
No.
No?
No. Okay. I
because you're like, well, this was good, but now I'm going to die. God damn
no.
it.
No, but that is, you know, I do look at Nelson Rockefeller for those history buffs. We could give away another CD or DVD. if
it's a giveaway.
If people didn't know how Nelson Rockefeller died. Do you remember
fucking someone?
He was.
Prostitute? Or
no, a girlfriend.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah. So, and
that's a good way to go.
And.
You're like, wow, I am good. That is a good orgasm, honey.
He died in her.
Honey?
And
in her. Wow.
And she panicked. And she dressed him. He was in an apartment that nobody knew he was in because he had a private tunnel built under 57th Street. And he could move.
Another tunnel.
A different kind of tunnel. Yes, a tunnel to the tunnel. And
can't.
So, of course, this is the former vice president of the United States, the former governor of New York, the brother of the chairman of Chase Bank, you know, one of the sons of one of the great American corporations in America. And so instantly the FBI, the Secret Service, the New York, you know, city NYPD detectives are there because this person is dead. And, you know, they're all around. And it was a New York City detective that said to the woman the governor was having an affair with, which was his girlfriend. It wasn't his wife, Happy.
Right.
Hence the joke, Happy wasn't happy. The detective said to, I forget if her name was Megan or what her name was.
Right.
You know, what happened here? And she said, he died. And the detective said, what happened here? She said, he died. And the detective said, listen, his right shoe is on his left foot. And his left shoe is on his right foot. What happened here? And that's...
Oh,
when it all came out.
Oh, shit. Oh boy.
Oh, shit.
So it was it the Secret Service?
Lack of
that
attention
broke the case?
To detail, everybody.
Yes, detail, detail, detail.
Put the dead guy's foot shoe on the right foot.
Right.
All right.
We know this because when we figure out, you know, finally how to be successful.
All right.
You know.
So.
By the way, just when, once we did have an issue, you may not know, but the reason why there are so many cameras and levels of security for any of you crazies out there.
Yes. Yes.
So many levels of security.
Yes.
In addition to not only Fred and Fred's cohort.
Max.
Right. Max. Forget Max. Mad Max. You know, there are all kinds of like secret, you know.
Yes.
Crazy
no, I was going to do that in my book. I was going to separate my stalkers into people I've dated and people I haven't.
Oh, yes, you could.
Right.
So we have all kinds of security here.
Yes.
And at a certain point when we were actually going through this and we had. The LAPD's
here.
They have a division that deals with people that are celebrities because this is not a unusual circumstance, unfortunately.
Yes.
And we had ex LAPD people that we hired privately, and we had vans up the streets with cameras, and we ultimately caught the guy, and it ended up being a good thing.
Oh, no, more than one.
Right.
There was one guy, there was one girl, there was one ex. It was a lot. It was like the cast of thousands. Anyway, yes, go ahead, Ron.
But, you know, at that certain point, it was like, Steph, you've got to stop talking about, you know, the guy that owns the show that's trying to kill you for the life insurance because, you know,
we're not, always gonna go,
you
know, him.
Because at one point we had a dead rabbit on her front step, and it was like, okay.
No, the rabbit was alive.
Oh, all right. Well, that's not bad.
It was in a cage on my front step, but it was alive.
All right. Waiting for the carbon monoxide to kick in. I don't know. Anyway, at the end of the day, it still comes down to, okay, this is getting pretty, that was getting creepy. Yeah. And you know, and we took that very seriously. We spent tens of thousands of dollars, you know, to make sure that, you know.
All right, so let's get to the next buzzkill part of your life.
Sure. Should we talk about my dead wife and my dead son?
No, this is
like. This,
can we continue talking about blowjobs?
Yes, I think
all right,
we should.
Listen, we fluffed you guys up with a blowjob story, but this is the other reason that Ron Hartenbaum is heroic and heartbreaking.
No, I'm not heartbreaking.
Okay, no, he's. Listen, that you are like me.
Yes.
A story in. Facing adversity and rising above it.
Sure. Well, you know,
continuing
it's life.
But yours is like, I catch myself sometimes when I whine to Ron. And I'm like, oh, okay, shut the fuck up. Because Ron's, okay. I will try not to cry. But your first wife, mother of your children, died of cancer. And then your 14-year-old son died in your arms shortly after that.
Yeah. No, he died. Actually, he died before Laura. And
sorry.
Yeah.
Okay.
Right.
So, no, but tell us the story. You were married because you were married. You had a wonderful marriage.
It's still 30 married to
something.
Laura. I was married to Laura for 24 years.
24 years.
And we were engaged for
Your
years
first marriage.
Right. Yeah. Which would have.
Where'd you meet her and what'd she do? And I forget all this stuff.
Really?
I know it, but just tell the people. Sure. The people want to know.
I don't think the people give a good goddamn.
The people fucking want to know, Ron.
If you say so, Steph.
All right.
You know, I worked at Gray Advertising in account management.
In New York,
On Procter & Gamble business. And I know people, Stephanie, or people that know me today go, that can't be true. But I was a very, very shy young man and insecure. And there was this woman that I saw.
And you were how old?
I got out of NYU with an MBA when I was 21. So I was in advertising at 23, 24.
Okay.
So I was young.
Okay.
You know, and, you know, I was on what is one of the world's leading great pieces of business, which is Procter & Gamble to this day in terms of brand marketing. And it was an honor and an incredible education after my education to understand how they do business and the quality of the products that they have, which are really simply magnificent. They really are. I mean, there really are companies that take pride in delivering great products. So here I was working
on this business.
No,
you have a passion for ad sales. Right. You really do.
And this time I was creating advertising and I was...
do you see how much product placement he's already done in this podcast?
Absolutely, and I love it.
So we... You know, Laura was in the media department, and I would see her in the cafeteria, and I'd see her in the media department and other businesses. And one day, she actually ended up getting assigned to work on the piece of business that I was the assistant account executive on. And you know, and that's how I met her. And then one day, I saw her in the and account executives in those days, and assistant account executives were like investment bankers without the potential of ever making the money that those guys made, but they would work us. You know, 16, 17, 18 hours a day.
Yeah.
And so there I was one night working late on stuff.
You were like Madman. Yeah.
And by the way.
I wanted to say that. I was like, he's like Don Draper.
And that he was such a great era, you know, the stuff that he did before I met my wife. After I met my wife, no. But before I, you know, and the ad agency business in those days, holy cow. So it was a lot of fun. For everybody.
Yeah.
And it was a creative environment and it was a, you know, anything goes environment and anything went. And so, you know, there was this woman who I got to know. And the way I went out on my first date with her is because I said to her, wow, I understand why I'm here, but you're in the media department. What are you doing here? And she said, yeah, and it's my birthday. And I go, and it's your birthday? She said, yes. So since it's my birthday and, you know, I'm here and you're here, why don't you take me out for a drink? And that was literally how...
You sly dog.
No, she. I was too shy.
I meant your ex-wife is a whore.
Yes. Yes. There you go. She wasn't, but okay. So, you know, we dated, and you weren't supposed to date. It was okay to
in the business, right? If you're in the,
and
you were,
there was rules that
it's
said
so
that
weird
because
Sean
have,
and I are together now. It's well, I'll tell you
that's
later.
Lovely, and yeah, congratulations. And you can't, you can't.
He's fine. With
not
that.
Really.
You were not allowed to have a husband or wife work at the same ad agency, and so all of this is going on. And so we decided that we were going to not let anybody know that we were dating, and for 18 months plus 2 years, nobody knew we were dating. We would go to events that the aid agency would have separately, to different parties that the people that we both knew in separate cars. We, even though we were living together at a certain point.
Wow.
And nobody knew until we decided to get engaged. And then
it's like being a gay.
Right. And that's what people thought I was. People thought I was gay, you know, and people that I worked with.
I can tell you, no, that's not true.
You know, would be hitting on at what was my wife. And then she became my fiance. And, you know. But ultimately, we let our management concurrently know that we had been dating. Nobody knew. The fact
such
that
we a weird time, right?
Right. The fact that we handled it as what they felt professionally as we had, rather than saying, okay, you have to leave or you have to leave, they both promoted us and they gave us more money and they set us up as an example. See, people could actually have mature relationships in the ad agency and not create situations where, you know, there are lawyers and depositions.
It's a madman love story. So but anyway.
But it would all happen at Gray. Yeah. And then we had three children.
Love
and then,
in your life, three children.
And then at the ripe old age of 42, she was manic about having mammograms every day before Thanksgiving. And literally every day before Thanksgiving, she would have a mammogram. And then the day after Thanksgiving, she would always tell me, oh, by the way, just so you know, I had that mammogram test and everything's fine. And one day after Thanksgiving, she said, everything isn't fine. And she was 42. And she was diagnosed with terminal breast cancer at 42. And we were fortunate enough to keep her alive until she was 49. But ultimately, she passed away. And before that, my our eldest son,
14-year-old,
right, had a kid that was sick from birth for whatever reason, without getting into the details, there he had a massive heart attack 1 week past his 14th birthday
in your arms,
and he died in my arms one morning after breakfast. So the good news out of even craziness like that is that my middle son, now my eldest son, is married and has a house.
Steven,
and,
right, who was fantastic.
And they are going to have a baby probably in early August. In fact, I know the date because the baby is in breech, so they're going to do a C-section. So this is a
it's
timed.
Locked. It's locked.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So that's very exciting. And then
Jonathan?
Yes, my younger one.
Who's very handsome.
He is. And,
used to be a fireman,
and
Vanessa.
He was.
He's very handsome, hunky.
So here's an example of a reaction to, adversity from a younger person. So with all that going on, as a high school student, he decided that he would be a volunteer firefighter in our town. And because he was a volunteer firefighter and had helped, and because he was under 18, he was never allowed to go into a burning building, but he would help on the outside and do different things learn all the process and everything else. And at one point he was the first responder, literally first person on a scene, given where we live to where an accident was. And, you know, he pulled somebody out of a burning car. So, you know, he did things like that, ended up getting into, the University of Vermont, not because of his grades, but because of his extracurricular activities. I'm in a soup kitchen, not that that's bad, or I'm doing this or I'm doing that, but it was something different than what a lot of their candidates were used to saying they did to try to get into college. And he kept going in that track, and you needed to take a required phys ed class. And so after his freshman year, rather than come home in May, he stayed for whatever it was, 4 or 5 weeks, and took his phys ed class in being a lifeguard, came back to Connecticut, and over July immediately got hired by the state of Connecticut. And the very first weekend he worked was the July 4th weekend. And that very first weekend saved like 3 or 4 lives.
Wow.
And
wow.
Got an award from the Red Cross, got an award from Congress, got an award from Governor Rell when she was governor of Connecticut. And so that kind of set him off in a direction. And then he became an EMT. because the University of Vermont is a level one trauma center for rural states. So he would do snowmobile search and rescues. He would
Get to the important thing. Is he's hot and he's is he married yet?
No, he's not.
Okay, well, Vanessa there Rumbles is yes. hot and also not married yet.
No, 6'4".
Okay.
Really?
6'4". Yes. Yeah. Nice big slice.
Yes.
All right.
And so.
All right. Let's get into your disastrous love life because it makes me feel better.
So, so I had a chance. So Laura died in 2002.
Yes. And you were grief stricken.
I was.
Yes. And so you
in
met
2003,
someone.
I had the opportunity.
This is when I first met you.
Yes. I had the opportunity. In 2003. Actually, you had a taste of this. Let's leave leave her name
I was
out
in a lot
this.
Of long car rides with a lot of phone calls.
Let's leave her name out
Of this.
You know, because... So, in 2003...
I don't want to say. Go ahead.
I was able to check off in one calendar year. And it is truly one of my... You know, I've asked my sons and my dear friends to make sure that this is mentioned... In my eulogy.
Yes, please. Yes.
You know, that in...
I'll mention it.
Please. In 2003, I was able to check off every single box on a government form for marital status in one calendar year. Oh. That is a lot of work. That is a lot
a little bit of
work.
A little bit of a rebound. A little bit of a grief rebound. Yeah.
So when, so when Alex and I were going to get married, we were at a dinner a couple of weeks before we were going to get married.
Alex is Ron's current wife. His third wife. Yes.
Yes. The current Mrs. Hartenbaum.
Yes.
And the forever Mrs.
Hartenbaum. She is lovely. She is lovely.
And so, you know, somebody said, you know, are you going to have a bachelor party? And I'm going, am I going to have a bachelor party? You know, at that point I was, you know, over 50. And the idea of a bachelor party just, it made no sense to me. And my lawyer down the table, a couple of seats away from me, yelled out to the table one of the really, truly great lines, Ron's second marriage was his bachelor party. So,
all right. So, wait. What was the status you checked off? So you,
so
were...
I was a widow, at the beginning of the year. Then I was, you know, at a certain point, I was engaged. I was married. I
divorced?
Then separated. Oh, then divorced.
Yes.
Then single. Yeah. Well,
yes.
You know,
she's very similar to a couple people I've dated. Anyway, right.
Which is why,
right? And
we have such
like,
an appreciation for the same
to put
type
the
of
knives
food.
Away.
Yes, there was... No, actually, I did one night. And, you know, my son and I were talking in the kitchen, and he saw me putting the knives away in the kitchen. And he goes, why are you putting the knives away? And I said, you know, well, you know, Blondon's had, I think, too much to drink, and I'm not sure.
I'm not
and
sure
he
about
looked
things.
At me,
yeah.
And he said,
sure.
Do you understand what you just did?
You're just and, you're putting and, the knives away.
Right. And then he just said, listen, see ya. And he just left the house.
Oh, my.
You know? And so it was like that kind of intervention before, you know.
All right. But you've been with the lovely and talented Alex for?
A while now.
How many years?
It's going on, it's almost as
you
long as
you and I. You can count blowjobs if you want.
No,
because
no,
that's,
was,
I know how you
almost,
are
it was,
with your romance
it's almost,
between the ambulance and the.
Yes, it's almost as much as, it's almost as long as us because I met her after.
Ron said that to me many times. He said, you are the longest relationship except the mother of my children.
Right.
All right, but now we're Alex and I are even.
No, you can't be in time. You're always going to be ahead.
Oh,
I think Alex is like 13. We're married for
you're
we're
right behind
be
me, sister.
11. Yeah, right.
Oh. And wait,
good.
And can we tell her family story? Because that's kind of fucking fascinating too. No.
Yes.
And
no.
Our,
no
and our
can.
Time in Santa Fe together. Remember?
I don't remember our time in Santa Fe together. You
like
know.
Her dad's
yes.
house.
Yeah. Well, that was great. He loves dogs. He, you know,
yes.
he had.
All right.
But let's talk. So Alex was, we're not sure what Alex was. We think Alex was a love child between a very wealthy woman and either a chauffeur or a gardener. But we do know that in those days,
desperate gardeners.
Alex was put up for adoption and was adopted into private adoption in those days, and you know, she had a birth mother that abandoned her in her mind.
Okay.
She had her first adopted mother who was undiagnosed, what do you call it? Oh, God, what is
the... Manic depressive?
No,
or...
no, worse than that. When you
psychotic?
I forget what it is.
Something?
But it'll come to me later. I apologize.
Okay, all right.
But she, you know, she really had a significant mental health issue, but nobody knew it.
Right.
Right.
So Alex had a
tumultuous. You haven't even been drinking your bourbon.
A little bit. I have to drive later.
But it is tumult.
And so she had her first adoptive mother who threw her and her older adopted sister out of the house when they were like 7. And they were standing on a street corner trying to figure out what to do. So they went to there because her father had already left his first wife. And then they had a second stepmother, but she really didn't want to, you know, she was recently married and she didn't want to have, you know, his first wife's kids. And so Alex was raised by her adopted father's grandmother, Granny, as she finally called
it. But let's get to the good stuff. So But her adopted father, because there's books about this too.
Her adopted father, who's no longer alive, Eddie was great.
What's his last name?
Let's leave it out.
All right.
So Eddie.
Well, there's a book about it.
That's okay. So Eddie was brilliant in math. Brilliant.
He was the Michael Milken of his day. He did a little time in prison.
He did twice for stock market manipulation, which he did mathematically. He was so brilliant. He went to, I forget if it was Horace Mann or something else, but he went to a private school, and Jack Kerouac was one of his classmates. And Jack Kerouac, I learned later in life, was horrible in math or just had no desire to do math. Right. And Eddie really didn't give a shit about English, and they did each other's work. And so my father-in-law got through this very significant private boys' school in Manhattan by having Jack Kerouac do his English papers. And Jack Kerouac graduated because he had this mathematical genius do his math work. And, you know.
So, all right.
But he did, you know, he was barred from trading in stocks.
Right. So can we talk about when we went to Santa Fe or no?
I don't remember that.
We went to Santa Fe to their house.
Because,
and
he's married
to someone 40 years younger.
30
years younger, sure. Yeah. Who had, they have 10 Dobermans? How many did they have?
How many Dobermans did
Dobermans
they have? They had a combination at one point of Dobermans and Rottweilers. So that was my
interest.
So the first time I went to,
and his wife,
when I was not
name
married
was
to
Peaches.
My,
Peaches. Right. And she was, I think, breastfeeding a puppy Doberman.
No.
When we were there. Yes. And I put my drink on something, and she was like, don't do that. That's the billion-dollar stamp collection.
You can't put a drink on a wood thing. That's like, a Larry David thing.
Sorry.
Did you put the ring on that?
Yes, I did. I was like,
God.
Fuck,
not on the wood.
Why is it sitting there, then?
Don't put the ring on
the
wood.
Fuck, man.
Really? So, the very first time I went to my future in-law's house, you know, the gates opened up. We drive onto the property. The gates close. And then all of a sudden, we are surrounded by a semicircle of Doberman Rottweiler.
Yeah.
And I look at these
dogs.
It's
fucking insane,
right?
Man.
We've been traveling all day. I've never been in Santa Fe. Here we are. I'm on what I believe will be my future in-laws. I'm meeting them for the first time.
Right.
Meet the Falkers. And we drive onto the property, right? So right away, it's like, wow, they got a gate, you know, and nobody else's house has a gate. And we go on. And then all of a sudden, here are these,
there's
animals.
A lot of them, Vanessa. There's a lot of them.
And
I love dogs. I was like, it's like
that.
The Omen.
And
what
so
the fuck's happening?
I look at my wife. She looks at me and I go, I think you should get out. She goes, why would I get out? And I go, well, it's your father. And she goes, they don't know that. I go, well, they sure as hell don't know me.
my Lord.
So we stayed in the car until somebody came out of the house, snapped, whistled, and the dogs all walked away. And, and then they got to know us
terrifying.
And become friends. And then, you know, over the years, you know, so so if it wasn't for my mother-in-law, I would have never had an appreciation of Rottweilers and Dobermans, who, you know, most people are afraid of. You know, Rottweilers are less afraid
scary.
Of Dobermans.
Yeah,
Dobermans are very, very aggressive. Rottweilers are aggressive if you get aggressive with them. Otherwise, they're just kind of lumbering, kind of like,
good to know.
Yes. But a Doberman, God bless it, you know, you don't want to be on the wrong side of that moment.
Can I just say, it is a good thing that you have a, probably blocks long penis because, and a good sense of...
A good sense of
success.
What?
Because your current wife's first husband owns the Pacific Design Center.
He does.
Many other things.
Right.
Private planes.
Yes.
And so you own this in your my basement.
Yes. Although I don't own it. You do. But it's so tasty.
We co-own this whole empire, no. Which is a little less than the Pacific Design Center and Private Plains, but it is.
It's our little happy universe. You know, the key is that if you have your health, here's a little Zen moment.
Yes, yes.
Can we do a sound effect?
Here it is. Oh. Here's Ron Hartenbaum's Zen moment, everybody.
People don't appreciate their health.
That's right.
And so if you have your health.
Listen to Ron Hartenbaum.
Okay, that's what
he
you should
was very
really
disappointed
appreciate.
That I just went to my doctor and do not have esophageal cancer. Because cha-ching with the heart, you know, the life it. Insurance.
I broke down and cried. Mm-hmm. Like a baby.
He's like, God so damn close. It, you've survived.
See,
again.
And if I married her brother, you'd still have a Miller show. It'd be Vanessa Miller show.
I think this is good. Okay. I say let's go for it.
No.
He's got this all figured out.
I say let's go for it.
All right, but the good news is, listen, this is a cautionary tale, isn't it, Sean? We have all survived and thrived. Ron has been through a fucking lot, man, and so has his family, and look at you. You're here.
I am.
Yeah.
It made in America week. You're holding up the whole progressive movement in America.
Can I just tell you something?
Yes. Yes.
I am proud of the fact, you know, and I love American, and then I have a Chevrolet. In fact, I'm on to my second Chevrolet Silverado quad cab. I know some guys are Ford F-150 people. We just found a better Chevy dealer.
Oh, fantastic.
But with that said, you know, I love the fact that Mai Tai, A, is not made by Donald Trump in China, but B, made by fabulous craft people and wonderful designers in Italy.
Yes.
So thank
you. Yes. Ron Hartenbaum does not need to do this, ladies and gentlemen.
No.
But Zenya. He does. But he does. And I love him. You know I get all sloppy about you.
I know. I thought we were going to do something. Aren't we supposed to talk about politics? Don't people want to hear about
done.
Politics?
We're done. We're going to go eat now and drink more bourbon.
That's it? That's the show is
do.
Over?
Yeah.
That's it?
We're done.
Really? Just like that? Do we have anything?
Listen, there are so many women lining up for sympathy fucks for you right now that we are not going to be able to process them.
I don't think so, but nice try. Any final thoughts, Vanessa?
I love you, Ron Hartenbaum.
Thank you.
Steve. Thank you, boo-boo.
You are amazing, and I'm so glad I know you.
There you go. Thank you.
Yeah. Yeah. 14 years, baby. 14 years in September.
Right. A big anniversary show.
Let's do it. Let's do this. Yes. All right. Happy fucking happy hour. God damn it. We blew the whole myth of the guy that owns the show that's trying to kill me for the life insurance money, and now you know I love him. Fuck! You love go. You, Ron Hartman.
Bye. Love you, Steph.